This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Review Show. On this first review of the season, we look back at a 1-0 opening day victory for Palace as a Wilfried Zaha strike sent Southampton back to the coast with nothing. On the show today is me, Chris Hambling. We have DR Kerners and Patrick O'Connor as well. So coming up, we'll be taking a look at Roy's team selection and tactics and the reaction of fans before the game. We'll talk some of the key moments from the match itself. We'll talk about player performance, give you our choices and your choice as well for man of the match. We've got questions and comments from you at home, so we'll be tackling a selection of those. And finally, we'll have a quick chat about the week ahead, quickly rounding up all the transfer rumours and giving our thoughts ahead of the away game at Manchester United. So before I talk to the gents, just a quick pointer in the direction of our social media accounts. Search Back of the Nest on any of them and you'll find us. Do rate and review us on your chosen podcast apps. Like and subscribe on YouTube. And I mention that because, of course, we are on video. Those of you watching already will know that, obviously. But we don't, you know, we're not charging extra for it. Just head to our YouTube channel and watch us in full high definition glory. Apart from Patrick, who seems to be a little blurry to me. I'm not sure about that. But there we go. Perhaps that's just the intensity by which you're thinking that's causing that blur. Anyway, I'm going to chat to you first, DR. Let's talk a little bit about the fact that we did a watch along for the first time for a competitive game. How did you feel that went?
Yeah, it went well. It went well, really well. That's why I'm happy. And also, Costa the dog is at the bottom of my screen. Mikey showed his dog. So that's why I'm laughing at the same time. what a name for a dog. But yeah, the watch along went really well. Over the moon with the result. Didn't expect it. I don't think many Palace fans expected it. None of us were really optimistic going into the season after how last season ended, but you couldn't get any better than that. Clean sheet, 1-0 win. And Roy Hodgson, finally, we got a win under him.
We did indeed. It'd be a problem if I didn't do this, because we started the feature last week, DR. So it's time for another round of what's in DR's cupboard. Those of you at home, obviously, those of you listening won't appreciate the visuals, obviously. But I'm excited. We started on quite a low key last week, but this week, what have we got here?
Yeah, I've got this delivered by Spotify. They delivered a Google Nest Mini. I'm not too sure. I haven't opened it yet. Got it delivered yesterday. Apparently, it's small and mighty. It's not advertisement as well. It's not advertisement as well, so we'll see how it goes. Look, there's some play but, some jazz, call mum, you know, I could call my mum on it, I could play Stranger Things on Netflix, so yeah.
It'd be quite awkward, wouldn't it, from where you are right now, if you said call mum, and your mum was just downstairs saying, what? Like, yeah, that's how you call mum, isn't it?
That's the point of it.
All right. Exactly. Well, okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, look, you're not sponsored by them yet, but we'll review it next week and see if we can get that sponsorship coming, because we need the money, don't we? Let's face it.
Yeah, I'm going to be homeless soon.
Are you?
No, good news. I'm not.
We will. I promise we'll talk to Patrick in just a little bit. I promise. But I've got another thing just in general. I'd just like to find out what you've been up to this week, because every time I see you, you're on YouTube. So have you done anything else apart from being on YouTube?
No, I'm still on YouTube. That's it. I've just lived there on YouTube for the last couple of months. Nothing exciting.
That's dedication for you. Well, if you want to know what DR is doing with his life, just check out our YouTube channel. Patrick, good to have you along. It's you're up stupidly early in America to deal with this rubbish, and we've not helped by taking ages to actually get going. But you know, been playing a bit of golf, got yourself a part-time job. Exciting times.
Yeah. First, DR,
Exactly. See, it's Spotify.
Same thing, mate. Yeah, it's brilliant. Brilliant. Love it. Google Mini's the way to go. I retired in June from full-time teaching. I taught and was administrator for 25 years in New York City. Figured it was time to leave with the pandemic and the policies of New York City. I was very concerned about how they're going to handle the pandemic, so I decided to get out. But I was actually recruited to be a director of an after-school program near my house, and I'm loving it so far. That's in the afternoon, but in the mornings, I play golf.
Yeah, I'm so jealous of your golf. I mean, I have to say, I was scrolling through Facebook today, right, and your picture came up of you on the golf course, but it was quite small. And then obviously there's two pictures side by side, and in one of them, you're wearing red, right, with a red face mask. And as I was scrolling
was
quickly,
yesterday,
it looked like Spider-Man. You looked like Spider-Man. I just paused and stopped, and I was like, first it was, oh, no, that's Patrick. Then it was like, why is Patrick dressed as Spider-Man? But you weren't.
Yeah, you know, the new rules are whenever you check in, you have to wear a face mask before. You don't have to wear it during the actual plane, but you have to wear it on the first tee. So I wear a different mask every time I go out there. So, yeah, that was my my red Spider-Man, a.k.a. Patrick mask.
I do get the feeling that most golf courses wouldn't let you stay if you were dressed as Spider-Man. It's just the kind of thing that they do, isn't it?
You're probably right, yeah.
Anyway, well, there you go. A little bits in terms of meeting the guys. Myself, I haven't really much to say, really. I did make a curry so hot, and I made it from scratch myself, so I've got no one to blame, that it literally has cleaned the entire of my insides out. So lesson learned there a bit, but I have lost a bit of stone, so it's good times.
You don't learn a lesson because you've had this many times, and we always keep talking about how you make it extremely hot. So don't say that lesson learned, because I know in a couple of us we're going to be talking about another one of the episodes.
No, you're right. And I did tell you about it just before we went live with the watch along, because if you haven't watched us on one of our watch alongs with the games, please do, because you'll notice on all of them, DR is and myself are often laughing as they begin. And it's because I always try and time something ridiculous just as we go live. And I'm enjoying that part of it. We didn't do that today. I was responsible for the fact that we were probably laughing a little bit when we started this one, because I got things wrong quite a lot. Anyway, should we just jump straight into our first topic? And our first topic is really just to delve straight into the game in terms of, you know, I think there was quite a strong visceral reaction on social media when the team lineup was announced. Clearly, we knew where their tactics were going to be because we'd seen it all pre-season. There was the excitement of potentially seeing Eze start the game. Batshuayi had signed, you know, would he start? And Riedewald had been so impressive pre-season. Was he going to start alongside MacArthur in that kind of more creative, you know, sort of almost playmaking kind of role, sat in front of the defence? You know, that's what we'd been kind of setting ourselves up for. But, and we'll get into the reasons why, when the lineup was announced, there was a lot of negativity, you know, myself included. I saw double Macca in midfield and immediately thought the worst. There was no sign of Riedewald at all. And your instant reaction was, come on, you can't drop him out of the squad, Roy. And everyone was kind of thinking, same old, same old. So starting with you, DR, did you have that same reaction before you started to think about it?
I think it was only Gyro for me, because Eze and Batshuayi, both of them for various different reasons, I knew that they wouldn't start. So it was Gyro, because Gyro has performed brilliant in preseason, one of the best players in preseason. And the fact that he's not even in the squad at all was just like, what is going on? Like, there must be an injury. The first thing that came into my mind was, it has to be an injury because Roy isn't this harsh. I know that he might not start him, but he will at least keep him in the squad. So yeah, hopefully Jairo's injury is nothing too serious. But apart from that, I wasn't too worried. I didn't expect like a brilliant lineup, because I already know that we had injuries and players that are not 100% fit. So I wasn't that disappointed apart from Gyro.
No, fair point. And like I said, that was probably where I landed when I started to think about the fact that Gyro wasn't in the squad at all. Because even if Roy had done the almost unthinkable of dropping him despite him playing so much pre-season, you would have expected him on the bench with his versatility. And even back into last season, he was featuring. So yeah, as soon as my brain kind of adjusted to it, I thought, actually, yeah, Gyro must have picked up an injury. Or I did fear maybe he'd had a positive corona test or had to self-isolate or something like that. But Roy confirmed it was an injury. But just again, to get your initial reaction, Patrick, you know, like myself, you've been a bit down on Roy, to say the least. And did did that lineup kind of confirm your worst fears that we weren't going to see too much different?
Yeah, and just to be clear, I'm still down on Roy. I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm glad we won yesterday, but the double Mecca pivot really bothered me yesterday. And it wasn't because I was upset he dropped Gyro. I kind of figured Gyro had to be something with either coronavirus or injured. What bothered me was that he chose McCarthy over Luka. And I'll get into my reasoning now. During preseason, McCarthy is hardly played. I think he played the Oxford match and maybe part of Millwall. I remember he didn't play Charlton at all. So he was on international duty. I heard he played okay for Ireland. I heard he wasn't that great for them. Luka, we know, came back late. He mentioned he was about 10 days behind. But for me, I would have started Luka only because if you're going to play him for a half and then be McCarthy on, I think it's better than starting McCarthy being Luka on late. Now, obviously, in hindsight, it worked out. But had it not, I'd be furious this morning. I'd be furious, absolutely furious. So I don't have a personal problem with James McCarthy. I just don't like the way he plays. Now, we're going to get into later on how he did play yesterday, and I thought a couple of things that he did I loved. I'll mention quickly the Ward-Prowse thing before we get into it in detail later on, but I'm just not a big fan of his. I'm just not the way he plays, and I just thought that yesterday I would have much preferred if Jai wasn't playing to see Luka with James McArthur.
No, I understand that, and I'll be honest, it wasn't until the watch-along where you started talking about the fact that McCarthy hadn't played much more football than Luka, where I right. suddenly thought, actually, yeah, that's a fair point. There's probably not much in it. McCarthy did play in the under-23s a bit, but then so did Luka.
Right.
So,
yep.
it was an interesting point and one I hadn't actually considered before. But like you say, as the game unfolded, we kind of saw, actually, you know, that's worked out all right. So perhaps shouldn't have been too disappointed there. Of course, you know, to get to the positives of the system, you know, we saw a continuation. We mentioned it quite a lot in the watch along that we had greater flexibility with this 4-4-2. It was quite, you know, the actual way the players lined up was quite rigid. You could see, you know, after about the second or third minute, it really settled straight into the two banks of four and, you know, and quite clearly two up front with one slightly deeper than the other. That was good to see that we carried on that system. But the thing that I think probably pleased us most, the biggest positive that we all picked out, was the fact that with Jeffrey Schlupp on the left-hand side and Wilfried Zaha up top, there was interchange of position between the two of them, keeping the defence on their toes and allowing an overload at times as well, especially with Mitchell getting forward and you know, sort of, you know, quite often we do favour that left-hand side. So, yeah, both McCarthy and McArthur ended up there several times. So that was nice to see, wasn't it, in terms of the tactical flexibility?
Yeah, 100%. You have to give Roy credit for that as well. But even by saying that, it still doesn't feel right because that should have been the case last season. But yes, he has changed about, which is what I've been screaming for, because Wilfried Zaha, he's no superhero. He's not going to glide through three or four players. Yes, he's a very good footballer, but you can't rely on that every week. And you look at the positioning of the average position of players on yesterday's game, Jeffrey Schlupp was right next to Wilfried Zaha. And that is exactly what we needed. A bit more fluidity, a bit more support for Wilf. And it's only Wilfried Zaha that actually benefited from that. Andros Townsend as well, which we'll talk about later. I feel like Andros Townsend benefited from having more support for Wilfried Zaha because it meant that down the left-hand side, there was ideally Mitchell, Schlupp and Zaha. So Southampton players had to focus on three players there minimum. So at the same time, it gave more space to Andros who went on to do his thing.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right to pick that out. And obviously, we'll go into a bit more detail on the goal later on. But I mean, finally, for yourself, Patrick, we've talked about a tactical positive there. And we'll talk a little bit about Dior's chat with the Southampton fan after the game as well and how they saw it. And because it's always good to get the opposition point of view where they don't have unavoidable biases, where we talk positively about things that might not be as positive as we think, and we talk negatively about things that might be not quite as negative as we think. And so we'll talk to Dio about that in a sec. But for you, was there anything else that you felt was really positive about that selection and performance?
I actually liked the way that Tyrique Mitchell played. I think that the opportunity that he had last year during the post-lockdown to get the minutes in, I think he's really adjusting. And again, it reminds me a little bit of, he's not Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I'm not trying to say that, but it reminds me of the fact that he's been forced into the lineup due to an injury and he's taken his opportunity. Now, yesterday I noticed that Schlupp I talked about when I got jumped on the jump watch along, I talked about how Schlupp looked very, very tired. It's because he was actually helping Tariq Mitchell out a lot on that left-hand side. So what Southampton was doing was looking to switch the ball from left to right, right to left. We talked about yesterday during the watch along about how Ward was being targeted, but Andros was helping him out a lot. So I thought the selection of Andros and Schlupp was really good by Roy, because it helped out both of our fullbacks to get, you know, more help, because he knew that that's what something that Southampton was going to do tactically. So I like that part with, you know, the whole Mitchell, Ward, Andros and Schlupp defensive lineup.
It's funny. We saw, reading on forums and social media and stuff like that, a few people were sort of picking out and saying, yeah, we left too much space out wide at times. But, you know, first of all, we do that, don't we? You talked about it, Patrick, in the fact that we'll let them have that. We'll let them have that space, because fullbacks will tend to tuck in narrow. And I think we tuck in narrow on the right because Ward becomes like a third centre-back at times, yes, almost.
Absolutely.
So we are always going to be left a little bit exposed out there, but it's all about how quickly we get out to the ball and try and snuff out that danger. And you're right, it puts a lot of emphasis on the people like Jeff Schlupp. And, he, to pick him out, there was the stat that came out after the game, which was he had made one completed pass at all game.
Exactly.
Which... No, Jeffrey Schlupp made one complete pass for the entire time he was on the pitch,
which is mind-boggling.
Which is breathtaking. But on any other day, had we lost that game, he would have been absolutely crucified. But absolutely, you're quite right to pick out that a lot of the work he did was would have gone unnoticed.
And just one thing I want to add. I want to add also. I noticed that McCarthy, who again I'm not a big fan of, did a great job of screening the back four. Of the two, him and McCarthy, it was definitely McCarthy who was given that role to kind of go side to side and sit in front of the back four. And I think that role was very important when you have two centre-halves in Kouyaté and Dan who haven't played together that much. So I thought that was a really important role yesterday.
Yeah, for sure. It was interesting seeing the kind of average position showing that McCarthy was a little deeper than that. But I think that sometimes could be a little bit misleading. Because you're right, McCarthy was doing the screening role. He was putting the challenges in. He kept himself more central. And I just think probably the reason McCarthy appeared in those average positions to be deeper was simply because we didn't have the ball a lot. You know,
exactly.
I think the intention was for him to go out wide. But I think we had 29% possession or something like that. Something as crazy as that. So I think you can't read too much other than to look at the general shape, and that was a 4-4-2. So well picked out there. All right, well, DR, over to you, really. Let's talk a little bit about the fact you spoke to, was it the Saints View, they're called?
Yeah, the Saints View. Dan from the Saints View.
And for those who haven't seen the reaction on YouTube, what was his general feeling about why Palace won the game? And in particular, I'm interested in where he felt we got the tactics right on the day.
Well, he mentioned that tactically Palace got a spot on, but the reason why he thinks that we won the game is because Southampton wasn't quite at it. He was actually very surprised, because even in the opposition preview, talking to him, and Athletic actually made a report on this as well. The Southampton fans are the most optimistic fans going into the season. Around, I think, 97 or 98% of them said that they were optimistic. That's the highest in the Premier League in Athletic's latest report. So they were very optimistic. And tactically, though, we have to talk about that, because in the first half, yes, we didn't have the ball. But when you look at it tactically, it's not all about the numbers and the stats and possession. As Chris said, we were narrow, and they couldn't do much. They went out wide, they were putting crosses into the box, and then Cheku, Kouyaté and Scott Dan, absolutely brilliant in defence. They were just stopping them. And in the second half, the only reason why I believe that Southampton played better than us is not really down to tactics, it was just intensity. They upped it, and we couldn't match it. Other than that, if we had the same intensity as them, then I feel like it would have been the same as the first half. And that's the reason why Southampton had them dangerous chances, because they were more urgent with their pass and more going forward as well. If we only changed that bit, then I thought that Roy Hodgson would have got it spot on.
No, thanks. That's a good summary, Dio. And I have to agree with you in how we stifled Southampton, because I think, you know, as an opposition fan, he's done exactly what we would do and look at why we didn't succeed and try and look at our team and our tactics. But you do have to look at how the opposition play, and we did set up very, very well. But not to say that we didn't ride our luck at times. And obviously we all know that we were very reliant on our goalkeeper making some very important stops, including one from Che Adams that just gets better every time I've seen it. I watched it a few times this morning prior to starting this recording, and it's yeah, it's a sensational stop. We'll delve into that in a bit. Let's get a little bit more into the game and talk about some of the key incidents. And we can't start anywhere else other than to talk about James Ward-Prowse versus James McCarthy. Patrick, you'd not long got back from the golf course for the second half,
right,
and made the comment, "Oh, why isn't McCarthy put a challenge in on her?" And you've now seen it, haven't you? You've now seen the challenge, I'm sure. Like, he put in on Ward-Prowse where he and then seemed to give him a little nipple tweak as well during the push. But he got right in his face, and Ward-Prowse did not have his usual effect on Wilf. He tried his best to kick people. You know, especially Eze when he came off the bench, he really tried to kick him and got nowhere near him. Not that I think anyone can. I saying this on Twitter yesterday, talking to Paul from our sponsors, Pitch Sport, saying I genuinely don't think it's possible to get the ball off Eze. But we'll talk about that later on. But going back to Ward-Prowse, satisfying that he had no real influence on the game and was poor, and a lot of people enjoying the confrontation.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't stand him. Yeah, it goes back to the incident with Wilf with the sending off. But yeah, I mean, when McCarthy came last year, I know the kind of player McCarthy is. You know, he'll get stuck in. And I was really upset the last two times he played South Africa. I know he played. I watched him. I said, put a tackling on him. Because I know for a fact, if you send up to Ward-Prowse, he'll back off. Yesterday, a perfect example. As soon as he got that tackle from McCarthy, he saw, and you know, you said the little nipple thing, he backed off. He didn't want no part of McCarthy. Mark McCarthy's right in his face. You have to love that part. And that's the thing that, again, I didn't see it live, but I did see it a replay about 50 times since. And that's exactly why, if he's in the lineup, that's what he has to do. He's got to pick out that player on the other team that does things like that to Wolf or anybody else and just negate them right away. And you're right, Chris. He did the thing on Eze. When Eze first came on, he tackled him. But after that, Eze, he ran the show for that like 10 minutes and a half. So again, if McCarthy does that, I won't have any problem with it. But again, to do that to Ward-Prowse yesterday, and then he had two free kicks over the bar. It was a non-factor. Like I said yesterday, I don't know how he's in the England squad. He's not any good. He's an average player at best. He can take a free kick. He's annoying as all heck. You know what? I'm so glad McCarthy did it yesterday. It was brilliant.
James Ward-Prowse is a fraud. Yeah, I just wanted to say that.
Well done.
He's talked about his set pieces when all of them flew to Rose Ed yesterday. And there's another thing. I don't know if you guys noticed, but as soon as he realized McCarthy was there, he started to back up a bit. And I don't blame him. You don't mess around with Irish guys. I know James McCarthy was there, but they're built different. They're built different. Just like Damo as well. They're built very differently. So as soon as he saw McCarthy, he done exactly what I would do, back off. And he's a fraud. He is an absolute fraud. And yesterday we saw it. He tried to do his little one or two kicks and stuff, but it didn't work because Wilfried Zaha already knows that he's better technically than James Ward-Prowse. So he doesn't have to play his games. He plays his own game and he managed to score a goal and win that battle.
Just to be clear, he was born in Scotland, just to say that.
Yeah, I did say that. He's born in Scotland, but
Ireland. I'm just joking.
just saying that as well, Dio. I'm Irish on my mum's side as well. So.
Yeah, you're not built different, though. I feel like your Irish is a bit different. Yeah, your Irish isn't quite up there. You need to have a certain percentage of Irish to be built different.
We'll take this offline. Yeah. maybe we'll see if you're right about that or not. No, look, very, very satisfying, obviously, to basically get Ward-Prowse out of the game. And I think it showed that he is weak. And I suppose if we go back to some of the talk last season, where people are, you know, perhaps rightly picking out that Luka doesn't give Wilf that sort of backup and that protection like a Delaney would or a Jedinak would. And he does get some stick for that. And when you're seeing, you know, what happens to a player like Ward-Prowse, who I agree is a bit of a fraud, and I think he's a fraud in the sense that he thinks he's a nasty player now. But to me, he's only playing at that. He's added it to his game. So it's not a natural thing. He's not naturally a tough guy. He's not naturally a tough player. And when he actually comes up against someone who's prepared to back it up, you know, as you say, he melts and melts away and doesn't do anything. And like I say, immensely satisfying. So I think, you know, good time to talk about the fact, Dio, that leading up to the first goal, which we'll talk about now, you and I were in mid-conversation about how I was saying how I don't rate McCarthy. And you and I were talking about how Andros has really got to do something to step up, otherwise he's going to be out of the club as well as out of the team. And then immediately during that conversation, McCarthy puts in a great challenge, puts in Andros down the right-hand side. He finds some pace from somewhere and scampers down the right and puts in a cross with his weaker foot straight to the feet of Wilfried Zaha, who is calmness personified on that finish, just side foots it nice and low into the ground, past the keeper before he can react. We're 1-0 up. It's the goal that wins the game. First up, it's quite nice sometimes, isn't it, Dale, when you get your own thoughts and opinions rammed immediately down your throat like that?
Exactly. But before the game, only watch along before we actually started watching the game, I did mention that these next couple of games, Mitchell and Townsend, it's going to be huge for them, because Townsend last season, he did not perform. And I was questioning him whether he's peaked, whether he hasn't peaked. But then afterwards, I realised that when I was doing the show notes, as I mentioned before, he had a bit more space. And I do genuinely believe that because of Schlupp, Wilfried Zaha and Mitchell going down the left-hand side, Southampton couldn't play their normal balanced game. They had to focus more on the right-hand side than on the left-hand side rather than Andros' side. So Andros did have the space. And like that, I don't know if he's going to have the space every game, but if he does, then he will perform like that. So hopefully it was a turn of form for Andros, but that was his best game for Palace in a very, very long time. I can't remember him having a more effective game than he did on the game against Southampton.
Yeah, for me, faded a little bit in the second half. But again, because everyone had less of the ball and we were further back. And you mentioned it. I think both of you mentioned it at different times during the second half on the watch along that we had failed to get people up top with Wilf and Ayew. Yeah. And every time we hit the ball long, it was usually for Wilf to chase into a channel, and there was just nobody up with him. And I think that's that's just a reflection of how the game went and the fact we had to get people back. And Andros was one of the people that suffered accordingly. But no, you're absolutely right. It was I'm always happy to be proven wrong, even instantly, whilst I'm talking, if it means Palace are doing well. But how about yourself, Patrick? I know, again, you didn't see a great deal of the first half, but all of the second, you got to see McCarthy before as he tired a little bit and he picked up that yellow card. But were you sort of, obviously, I take it, pleasantly surprised by his effectiveness?
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I mean, obviously, the game was shown live over here, so I actually recorded the game. I've watched it since at least twice. But just want to go back to the goal. Again, great challenge by McCarthy. But I want to pick out a couple of things about the goal that I really, really liked. The cross by Andros, if you look at it, he's obviously left foot, he uses his right foot, but he picks his head up before he makes the cross. And that allows him to see who's in the box. And then you'll see Wolf kind of drifting. And I don't know if you guys remember way back when in the Brighton playoff game, Wilford made the comment that Ian Holloway has told him, get in, try and get in the back post. And there he had that great-headed goal against Brighton. Something that I think if Wolf adds to his game now, he's playing more forward, it will get him a lot more goals. So firstly, I want to give Andros a tremendous amount of credit for the cross, because the cross was a really good cross. Going forward, fast-forwarding to the half chance we had in the second half with Schlupp. Watch out Schlupp when Schlupp makes that cross, the one that IU could have gotten to, but it didn't. He just runs with the head down, left footed cross, then picks his head up. He never looked up to see who was in the box. We had Ayew at the near post and Wilf at the back post. And for me, that's the difference right there between Schlupp and Andros. Andros is more of a pure winger who will, pick out a cross and look for a player, whereas Schlupp's kind of more of a head down type player, lots of energy, but doesn't really. So my point being is that if you only have one or two chances a game, you've got to be more like Andros than Jeff Schlupp. You've got to look up and put in that kind of a cross. Without that cross, it's a 0-0 game. We don't score that goal. So just want to point that I really look back and saw that those crosses are just two different types of players. But again, you've got to be able to, see the cross and make them run. Again, on the run also, Wolf makes a great run. Ayew kind of doesn't, because he doesn't think he's going to get the cross at that time, because Schlupp doesn't look up for him. So again, just interesting. But again, I thought Andros, again, you're right, DR, or someone's made the comment just now about we didn't do it in the second half. But the first half, at least, it was some good stuff that we saw in the first half, at least.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about Palace and their crossing in general over the, probably over the 10 years we've been doing this stuff. But it's always noticeable when we actually do get our act together and start putting the ball in the box, what we do create. And I know Roy was talking in the back end of last season about what they've been working on. And they've been working on the kind of, he referred to it as the Man City approach, which, I think yeah, I've got my own views on whether that's right or not. But getting people in and around the 6-yard box and having areas where they're going to deliver the ball. And it's traditionally they're talking about a low cross with people running onto it. But the kind of frequency where we get into those areas and we drill the ball back across, you know, teams have quite often just got loads of people back. We haven't got enough people forward and we kind of missed out on anything. That was going back to a much more traditional type of cross, a relatively early ball in. We've got the team, our opposition are backpedaling. They haven't got players back. And that's why there's space. And that's why, you know, clever movement and good delivery will get you a proper chance on goal. And we just need to do that more. I really feel that way.
Yeah, Hambo, it's a great point. And look at the goal we scored against Man City last year, Wolf's goal, the own goal. It's because he got to the line, made an early cross, and Fernandinho hit it into his own net. That cross is very, as a coach, that cross is very effective. Getting to the byline, knocking it back 6-yard box for your attacker or someone else to get it in, it works every time. And I'm surprised we don't do it more often.
Yeah, for sure. I just looked at DR's face there and I thought he was almost poised for a point, but he hasn't spoken yet.
I was just thinking about that comment about playing Man City ball when we only scored 31 goals in 38 games. I guess Roy is better than Pep. But I guess Roy is better than Pep, so it just shows that Man City ball is nonsense. Play Roy ball.
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about VAR, because we saw kind of both sides of it, didn't we, in this game? We saw the, you know, even though it went against us, you know, in a technical sense with Kyle Walker-Peters' red card being overturned, that's the way you want VAR to be used, isn't it? You know, there's an incident, there's a reaction, it gets checked, and the referee is given that ultimate choice, isn't he, of going, looking at it again and making the right call. When we saw it live, we all said, after our initial reaction, we all said, that looks like a yellow more than a red as soon as we saw the replay. I then tried to backtrack because I really wanted him to get sent off. But basically, we all agreed that was probably the right call. And you know, DR, it was refreshing to see, wasn't it, in a lot of ways?
Exactly, because at the end of the day, it's called video assistant referee. There should be assisting the referee, not making a final decision. So it was good to see John Moss actually go to the screen and make his final decision. That's exactly how VAR should work. It's there to work. Like, I don't know why last season it was implemented in a weird way where the referee didn't make the decision. I think they were too scared about the timing on how long the decision will take. But it was brilliant. I'm just thinking now, yes, we watched it on TV and it was different, but I still feel like if I was at a stadium, that would have been a different feeling. I still would have thought that was a red card because of the way it looked. Yeah. Studs out. And if Mitchell wasn't jumping, then that would have been a very nasty challenge.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Funtime videos, choose your matchday squad, post-match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It was interesting to hear Mitchell at the end talk about the fact that it actually wasn't the connection with the foot that made him go down. It was the fact that Walker-Peters' arm went into his stomach, and he wasn't too bothered about it. He just said, you know, it winded him. That's why he stayed down. So I thought that was quite interesting as well, because sometimes even in Match of the Day, that the highlight was the connection with the foot, but you know, that's just something that happens when two players are going for the same ball. So it was the right call in the end. But switching to the other call, Patrick, with Wilfried Zaha being given offside after finishing, you look at it and the way they're using VAR for that still feels so wrong to me. You know, feet were onside. You could see that clearly. And then you start to look at the pictures about where, you know, what's being measured. So you look at, first of all, you look at the defender, the furthest back defender. and the line they're using to measure, his right foot's over that line. So they don't seem to be measuring that from the right place. And then you start to look at what they're measuring from Wilf. It's either his head or his shoulder or his hip. They've decided which one of those is the furthest forward. Take us through your thoughts around that decision.
Yeah, well, first I want to say I'm a big VAR fan, but I just find that certain parts of it are being used incorrectly. I know they've changed the handball law or rule, so that should be better this year. Because last year, I mean, guys are making handballs at the halfway line, and then the play would continue, and then it'd be a goal, and then they call it back because there's a handball at halfway line. So that's the first thing. But our own Albert Curley had a great tweet yesterday, and I'm not going to read the entire thing because unfortunately I can't find it on Twitter. But it basically said that, does it really matter where your head is when you're up by the halfway line? And that's the thing. I mean, I understand that you can score with different parts of your body, but it really should. If you're not going to go with just the feet, it's going to get ridiculous. So he's got a great point. If you're outside the box, let's not worry about what part of the body is offside. Let's worry about just the feet and then draw that line. Because if you're thinking about the elbow, you know, the arm, the shoulder, the head, out, you know, at the halfway line, it's getting ridiculous. Just make it simple where you can, if you're in the box, you can score with your head and your head's offside, fine. But if you're halfway line, just let them play on and then let it go. I don't understand why they insist on looking at every single part of your body to draw this line. And then last year, I remember there were parts where I didn't quite understand why it was offside, because they would just pick a body part and say, oh, his elbow was offside, oh, his finger was offside. And I think a couple of times it was his boot or his lace. It's getting ridiculous. They have to figure this out because VAR is very important. Dion mentioned it before. It's useful when a referee goes and looks at it, but you can't be called offside for stuff like that. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just stupid.
I think the rules should change. I think the offside rules should change as a whole, because at the end of the day, it should be, when you're looking at, even if you look at feet and not his shoulders and his head, head size and whatever, it's still going to be hard to determine. I feel like the offside rule should be his whole body is clearly offside. So if it's in line, if any part of his body is in line with the defender, I feel like that should still be offside, onside, I mean, not offside. But if his body, if he's physically ahead of him, his whole body, and you can determine that, then I think that should be offside, because like this is never going to work. Even when you look at the feet, when you look at his biceps and you look at his toenails, it's just you can't be 100% accurate. But maybe if you can determine whether his whole body is ahead of the player, then like that, I think things will get easier.
And yeah, I want to add one more thing, because when I coached, it used to be you gave the advantage to the attacking player on an offside. And I know that's changing the rule, but if you went with that, then if there's any doubt, it's onside. That's what you used to do. And this is pre-VAR. So I don't know why they changed the rule now where you're looking at every body part. Just give the advantage to the attacker. And as DR said, if you're not sure, let it be onside, because it makes the game more exciting anyway. It's just gotten so ridiculous. It just has. Sorry, I want to just add that part.
No, it's fine. And it sort of lines up with what I'm really going to say, which is, I mean, first of all, I'm somewhere in between. I mean, the whole body thing, I understand the logic behind, but it just goes back to the point, if everyone's clear and the laws are being applied properly, then fine. I might not like some of it, but then fine. But I think the margin of error, first and foremost, in VAR, when you're starting measuring these lines and you're trying to measure the moment at which the ball's kicked, there's a margin of error there that doesn't suit the way it's being used right now, because you can't definitively prove on and offside to the kind of margins that we're talking about.
Agree.
But ignore that. Just look at the human aspect, right? Look at what it means for a footballer to be trying to time a run to stay onside.
Exactly.
Right? What are they doing? It's very hard for a human being to know all their dimensions in one moment. But what they can do as a footballer, and it is called football, let's not ignore that, It's work out where their legs are and what they need to do to ensure that their legs are behind the legs of the other defender. You can do that, right? Because you can see your legs, you can see their legs, you can see how you roughly line up. So if a player like Wilf has made a clever run, kept his feet behind the line of the offside line that he's picturing in his head, and he's timed that run, you have to reward that. What you don't do is punish because his shoulder or part of his head is slightly further up if you draw a line down from a place that you think is about right. That's not football. That's not helping anybody. You look at that run and you go back even 5 years. Everyone says perfectly timed run. Yep. Brilliant from Wilf. Yep. Kept a calm head, finished brilliantly. Didn't look up, didn't, you know. And I suppose the flip side is you look at those where sometimes the lino looking across won't be completely up with play. So he'll look up and he'll miss the timing and he'll give it offside. And that's the error. So we were trying to eliminate errors, but what we've actually done is create more uncertainty. So that's why we get frustrated and that's why we don't like it. So for me, I think you just talk to footballers, ask footballers, what do you do when you're timing a run? What do you consider on and offside? Forget about the bias, forget about your desire for your team to win the game. If I'm asking you right now, what is on and offside? Tell me, and then just go with that. And I think you'll get a consistent answer, which is clearly one person being in front of the other. That's offside.
I think they'll change it sooner rather than later. They changed the bits of VAR, which we saw yesterday. With the offside rule, I feel like maybe next season we'll see it, where they will discuss it throughout the season and hopefully actually talk to footballers who are actually playing the game and finally come with a solution to that, because it's never going to work like this. Just, you can't just look at someone's shoulder and you can't look at someone's head. But as Chris said, these are tight margins that you can't even predict accurately right. We don't know if the computer is at the right frame, so...
I mean, I can understand the temptation when you've got the technology to freeze that moment in time that the lino can't freeze. Look at that setup and start to try and plot whether they actually factually were on and offside. I can understand that you've got that technology, so why wouldn't you use it? But to me, you've just lost sight of what you're trying to do there. You're trying to eliminate human error. And clear, we talk about clear and obvious, don't we, all the time? Clear and obvious human error. And I think we've just lost sight of that.
Yeah, and Hambo, excellent points, both of you. And the thing is, it's when the ball is played. And there's absolutely no way you can sync up when the ball's being played to that line. You can't do it. They're not using some technology where they have a sensor where the footballer's foot, it has a sensor where when the ball is actually hit, then the line is drawn. So they're off fractionally. So you have to take those fine margins out, give a little bit of error, and then just go from there.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, just to end on that, I'll go back to last season where I think one of the papers did a really good bit on Raheem Sterling being called offside. And they showed between two frames where between where he was effectively on and offside, he'd moved about, I can't remember what it was now, it's about 10 yards or something like that, because he was running at full pace.
Yep.
And they said, the actual contact on the ball to kick it happened between the two frames.
Exactly.
So there's physically no way of knowing which point he was on and offside, exactly, or whether he was level. Absolutely impossible. Yet they still reviewed it on VAR and gave a decision. And you just think, what are you doing? Yeah, you've lost it.
They're ruining.
Anyway, look, hopefully we don't talk as much about VAR this season as we did last season. And we see continued use of referees going to the sidelines. That's the directive they've been given for red cards, penalties, things like that. Anything contentious, they've been told that the VAR won't tell the referee to change a decision. They'll tell them to go and look at it for themselves because they think there might be a change of decision. And that, for me, is a massive step forward. But we're still nowhere near where we need to be on some of that stuff. So let's talk. We've talked a little bit about some of the Palace chances and where we had opportunities there. But Southampton did have a fair few. I watched it a few times this morning. I know you've watched it again, Patrick. I'm sure you've got some stuff in your head as well, Dio, from the Southampton chances. But it started really early on with a completely free header for Stevens from a corner, which was a little bit of a worry. But we did tighten up. But, your mind immediately goes to the saves that Guaita's had to make. I mean, it was absolutely sensational from Che Adams. It was hit so hard. That's the that's the thing. We talked about it on the watch along. It's a save as good as a goal. If your keeper saves that is a bonus. You don't expect it. And he made a very good late save from Ings, which I think got probably more attention, which wasn't right. It was timing wise, it was really important, but it wasn't as tricky as the Adams one. But there are other chances as well. I think Redmond quite early on in the at the near post save, where Guaita's positioning is just perfect. He's exactly in the right place. And you miss those as well because he makes it look easy. But my point being, Guaita was brilliant, but we rode our luck at times, I think it's fair to say, Dio.
We did, but I just wanted to say, we talk about average age of squad, and Vicente isn't the youngest goalkeeper, but give him the contract. He needs to sign this new contract because I do not care whether he's 30 or 40 or 50. He's performing well. He's one of our best players. Last season he helped us alongside Jordan Ayew. But this season, I know it's only one game, but he seemed like he's going to continue that form. And he deserves a new contract. That's the only thing that I'm worried about. I just want him to sign that so I can be at relief, because he's been linked with other clubs, potentially returning back to Spain. And I don't think we should sell him at all unless a crazy amount comes. But that all changes if he doesn't sign a new contract, which we need him to as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not panicking yet. I don't think he wants to leave. Let's just make, you know, put that clear. He's so good with the Palace fans. And Roy talks about him very fondly as well. You know, was very keen to point out after the game just how much we were indebted to him. So, you know, when Roy is a massive fan as well, you know the club will be doing everything they can to keep hold of him. Patrick, he's obviously been a breath of fresh air for you in terms of goalkeeping, and just how important was he yesterday?
He was fantastic. I want to go back to last season, because I'm going to admit something. I was a little worried last year that Sheffield United error that he made. I thought that kind of had a little knock-on effect. And I didn't think he played that well, honestly, post-lockdown. During the lockdown matches, I mean, we lost a bunch of them. It wasn't his fault, but I thought he could have been a little sharper. But yesterday, he was absolutely fantastic. And you're right, the Adams save was so reactive. And it's something that you don't expect someone to make. And again, I want to go back to, you know, my favorite Palace goalie, Speroni. Speroni made those saves all the time. And we forget, well, I don't forget, but people forget how important some of those saves were. And again, they're as good as goals. I'm telling you, if those goals go in, and they should have gone in, we lose that game 2-1. This is a totally different podcast today. It just is. It's totally negative from the standpoint of how poorly played in the second half. We didn't create enough chances. Why was MacArthur starting? You know, how could Guaita give up that goal? I mean, you just get a feeling how negative, you know, why was Batshuayi brought on? You know, why weren't there more subs made? So those saves are so important. So I'm with DR. I mean, I hadn't realized that there was a contract out there for him. We've got to re-sign him, because if we have to go back to you-know-who for any reason at all this season, it's going to be a problem. And we don't have, like, a young goalkeeper. And as DR said about, I mean, he went over the top of the 40-50 comment, but goalies in the 30s are not an issue. You know, they can play, they can perform, and that's because of the experience. But, you know, we're going to have to look for another goalkeeper. So where do we go for that? Where do we go? We go somewhere in Europe, because you aren't that many good, you know, English goalkeepers we can get. I mean, Henderson went back to United, and we can go all that, you know. So, no, he's got to be re-signed, because, again, he's as valuable as a team as any player that we have currently. And that includes Wilf.
I normally don't do player suggestions, but I'm not even saying this because I'm Turkish. He plays for Trabzon, which I don't like one bit, that club. But he plays for the national team as well. Their goalkeeper is very good. Like, he's very good. He was linked with Chelsea as well, but they didn't get him. That's a very good question. He's young. I'm pretty sure he's young, but I'll check out his age. But yeah, he's very good. I feel like if we have opportunity to get him, I'm not, I never suggest players, but he is.
I have a suggestion, and Hambo will go in with you. Football manager, Wilker Fariñez, the Venezuelan keeper. He's a legend. An absolute legend in football manager. Let's sign him.
And let's not forget as well, for the future, Martin van der Vaart.
Yes.
Belgian keeper.
Another one.
It'll be great in a few years. FM20.
Yes.
Anyway.
Sorry to digress.
But unfortunately, the keeper I've got now is a regen, so he doesn't really exist. But
how could you do that?
I can't recommend him, sadly. That's what happens when you're still playing Football Manager in 2030.
Exactly. it doesn't actually exist, which is not as much fun.
Mm. There's a couple of other bits in here that you've in the show, Dr. Patrick, where you've put in. We'll talk about Mitchell in the next section. But just finally, you've made a good point there in about, you know, what would we do in terms of looking at next weeks beyond. We've won the game. You know, we've defended well. Do we change a winning lineup? And you've been pretty adamant in your response there.
Yeah, listen, I had the argument on Twitter all the time with people about winning lineup. You can't change it. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yesterday was a needs must lineup. Jairo was injured. Batshuayi had just signed, wasn't ready. Eze had been injured. You absolutely have to change the lineup for next week for me. You have to start Eze. You have to find a way to get Batshuayi in there. And if Jairo is healthy, you got to play Batshuayi. And I might even add, you might even want to add Luka. I'm being serious. At this point, I get that, you know, we've got a very valuable win against Southampton. But look at the matches coming up. We're playing United, Chelsea, Everton. There are some tough games coming up. And do not tell me that the lineup we had yesterday is going to continue to win those matches. It might. It might. Don't get me wrong. But for I'm concerned, if players like Eze, Luka, Batshuayi are fit, they have to start playing because we have to bed them in. And I know we've got the game against Bournemouth on Tuesday, so he might put them in then, and that would be great. But as far as I'm concerned, you don't just say, okay, we beat Southampton, great, let's stick with the same lineup. I hate that thought as a coach. I hated it. You've got to adjust your team to the teams that you're playing and the tactics you have and the health, etc. Don't tell me one a game, keep the sign up. That is such an antiquated way of thinking about football. It's ridiculous. Go ahead, Dion. I see your hands up. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but with the United game in frame of mind, do you think Eze would be the right man, especially when we talked about how much Schlupp has helped Mitchell? United are an attacking threat. They're not defensive threat, but they will score more goals than you. That's their game plan. They're not that great defensively. So when you put in Eze, and then I think Batshuayi, that's a realistic option because we haven't talked about Jordan Ayew, but he didn't have the greatest of games. He had a pretty quiet game. So I think Batshuayi can come in there. But when you do Eze, I'm not too sure because then the balance goes and we're more attack-minded. And with United, that's a bit risky.
Okay, so did you watch Liverpool-Leeds game yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay. How did Leeds play yesterday? Away from home, yeah, no fans. But how did they play? They played their game, right? They played. They weren't afraid about it. I mean, they lost the game 4-3, and that was, unjustified to me. But they Bielsa decided he's going to play a certain way. My point is, stop being so negative and just put the players that you think can perform. Eze was, it was 10 minutes, but he keeps the ball ticking over. Look at the difference between we complain. I mean, I was on him for the last second half. 35 minutes of that half was horrible possession-wise. It was terrible. Eze comes on, we are attacking. Wilf has two chances, one that was called offside, one that he missed, all because Eze's in the game to kind of hold the ball, switch the play, keep possession, that kind of thing. Don't tell me you can't do it against United because, again, he's a player that is confident. And my point is that I'm sick of this whole idea of because we won a game, keep the lineup. I want to play... I'm tired of Roy Ball. I want to play something more exciting. And we have players that can do that. Why don't we try it?
Yeah, but that's the thing. He's not going to change. We're not going to play like Leeds. That's my problem.
I get that part.
So putting in Eze into the lineup is just going to, under Roy Ball, I don't see it working as much against United because I feel like Mitchell will be exposed. I don't know if Eze is as good defensively as Schlupp is going back.
Wow, we've drifted into a few topics there, haven't we?
yes, we have.
It's an interesting debate, though. I think I think what Patrick's saying is absolutely bang on in where I think in terms of how what I don't like about how what we keep referring to as Roy Ball, which makes my skin crawl. But what I don't like about it is too reactive to other people. It is too much thinking about how do we negate the opposition. And I understand, particularly old school managers, that Warnock was the same. You have that mindset of we have to earn the right to play. Yeah. And if you never get to that point of earning the right to play, you never play. So, that's a hard thing to have to deal with. But I do understand the mentality to a point. But it also is a difficult journey to get to somewhere where Leeds are, for example. Now, Bielsa is a fairly unique character.
Yes.
But let's face it, they've come up from that division with momentum, with a philosophy, and they've gone out and they've bought well or brought players in a very sensible way that they fit that system straight away.
Right.
And, they play with a freedom that we don't play with. And to change, so it's very difficult for Roy to walk in to Beckenham tomorrow and go, right, guys, I've changed my mind about everything. I'm now going to just say, look, attack, attack, attack. Don't worry about shape. Don't worry about defense. So he's not going to, he's like, guys, I saw Leeds on TV against Liverpool. Can you just play like that? But don't lose.
One second. You're right. But he has changed, though. The 4-4-2 is not Roy. He changed that part. I mean, hasn't he? He changed the 4-4 is not Roy. So he looks like if he gets certain players, he will change. I'm obviously not trying to play like Bielsa. Bielsa's football, the whole pride press is absolutely fantastic, but it's not Palace. But my point is, you have Eze, you have Batshuayi, you have Luka, you'll have Ferguson, you have Maya. Just put them in and have them play in that 4-4-2. Where you have the interchanging. We did that last year. Wolf wasn't playing forward last year. It was a wide player. I mean, he's making changes. Exactly. Unbelievable. Wolf Zaha, wing back. Most dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. But my point is, you can tell he's willing to change. Just adapt just a little bit. At least try it now. So when we get to the Chelsea matches and Man City matches, you know, it's not going to be totally, oh my God, he changed the entire system around. But anyway.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that one of the things that is clearly being done is to bring youth into the squad. And that, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why we have to kind of forgive him a little bit for not playing a high-pressing system or anything like that. Because we don't, we just don't have the legs for it, do we?
Yeah, no, I got no problem with that.
We try it in spells, don't we? We'll either start a game with a high press, or we'll do it if we go 1-0 down and there's
right,
10 minutes left, yeah, we might high press.
Desperation.
But basically, generally speaking, we don't employ that. We try and use shape, you know, and keep calm and let people have the ball at times. And yeah, it's a hard watch. You know, there's no getting away from it. But, you know, in the cold light of day, I understand why we do it. I think what the frustrating thing, and the reason that lots of us did turn against Roy last year and still have reservations this year at the very least, because we didn't see it changing and we didn't see any desire for that to change. You know, it felt like that's the way we're going to play and that's the way it's always going to be. And the more we see that adjusting and the more we see this system, that let's face it, is an old Roy system from when we had different players. If it works properly and we play a bit better than we did against Southampton for the rest of the season, I think people will relax a little bit.
I just want to clarify one thing. I do want Eze to start like Patrick. It's not like an anti-Eze agenda, but I'm just saying, realistically, under Roy's system, I can see him maybe... It might not be the best game against United if we're playing 4-4-2 and he's out wide. Especially how we're
pushing against Southampton. Nah, man, you don't rate him. Admit it, you don't rate him.
What? Watch your reaction video. Watch your reaction video on YouTube.
I'm just joking.
Yeah, just a bit of a joke there. Look, we'll steam through the next topic because we basically talked about it throughout the course of it. We're talking about player performances, who was bad, who was good, and who was Jordan Much level. And I don't think we had too many Jordan Much levels, which it's a very hard thing to achieve, to be quite honest with you. But we'll have a little chat. I mean, let's start with Eze, of course. We've talked about him a bit. But for those 10 minutes, well, I suppose 15 with injury time added, You don't want to get carried away, do you? I've got this thing in the back of my mind saying, don't get carried away. And I had the same reaction when I saw him play against Oxford in pre-season. I was like, okay, he looks unbelievable. But it's only Oxford. It's only pre-season. Don't get excited. He comes off the bench against Southampton. I'm in my head going, yeah, they were tiring. They were chasing the game. He's not going to have that much space usually. You know, he's not going to have a team that's a sort of established in the match around him. He's definitely not going to be that good. But then you watched them trying to tackle him. They can't. Like, he gets the ball at his feet and he'll either run past you or he can use his strength and hold them off. So intelligent in how he needs to retain possession of that ball. And the timing of the pass and the weight of the pass is unbelievable. And the quickness of the feet is unbelievable. So what the hell? You know, what else can I say to try and calm myself down? Anyone?
No, he's gifted. He's gifted. Like, it's not a fact of this player is, you know, he's got fast feet. He's just naturally gifted. He's born to play this game. His concentration levels, his where he sees the game, his IQ of the game. You can see it. I mean, we haven't seen him play 90 minutes. It's crazy how we're talking about this player like this, but we haven't seen him play 90 minutes. But in a short spell, you could see all the hype that QPR fans were talking about. He's got that fast feet. He's got the IQ of a footballer. And put him next to Wilfried Zaha for 90 minutes. Then we'll see. 45 minutes against Charlton, it will be a Charlton. They were brilliant together. That fluidity in the 4-4-2 system, it worked perfectly. But then again, we have to see him play and start more games, but not against United. I'm just worried about that. I'm just worried about the United.
Well, I disagree. We did.
I can't remember the lineup then around. But if he was playing 4-2-3-1 and Eze was central and Schlupp was still on the left-hand side, then that would be amazing. But that's not going to happen under Roy. So it's just one of them things.
I'll say is that Eze's debut was phenomenal. I'm trying to go back to think of another player who excited me as much in his first. And I mean, I love Max Meyer, but Max Meyer, his debut didn't stand out like that for me, which is probably why he's not playing.
Bolasie, possibly.
But I was more thinking about Premier League. But you're right. Oh yeah, Bolasie was actually very exciting. But that's my point. Look what Yannick went on to do. So, listen, again, it's short term. But again, Chris pointed out his ability on the ball and his vision for me means he can play at any level against any side. If you can do that against Southampton, you can do it against Man United, because of the fact that once you have the ball at your feet and you look up, you've got Wilfred, you've got Ayew, you've got Batshuayi ahead of you, you're going to be confident. I mean, so for me, see, I'm 100% against you. You have to start him against Man United. You just have to. But again, it's Roy, and it won't happen. And I know that. And I'm
it won't phase him either, is it? I really enjoyed the clip of him. Obviously, we haven't mentioned it yet, but when he destroyed Walker Peters,
murdered.
Left him on the ground.
Yeah. The fact that he laughed afterwards as well. Like,
no respect.
He couldn't help it. He couldn't help himself. He walked away and he had like a straight face, but then he turned back round and the camera caught him, and he was just giggling to himself. That joy, you know. Hopefully, no one even dares try to coach that out of him, because if he has to keep that joy in putting people on their ass, because it's beautiful.
And Dio, I want to add one thing. Remember, there's no crowd at Old Trafford. There's no crowd to boo Eze and intimidate Eze. So, I mean, you won't get a better chance to put him in a debut against a top club. There's going to be no crowd. So why not now? I say, if not now, never.
No, it's not even about the crowd. It's just his defensive work. That's my problem.
Yeah, I understand it, but the crowd would have been an issue. You're figuring, you know, your debut for Premier League, you know, against a top side, blah blah blah. Way the crowd's on you, but no, I get the defensive part. But you know, if you have got the ball, you got to defend.
We'll see.
Right. Well, let's very quickly wrap up on a couple of other people we want to talk about in terms of performance. Both of you picking out Tyrique Mitchell. I think at various times. There's so many to talk about though when you actually think about it, because I'm going to rattle off a quick list of the people we've all highlighted. So I've gone with Wilf, both Mackers, Mitchell, Andros, who we've talked about in terms of a 50-50 game for me, Eze off the bench, and Bethente Guaita. DR's also picked out Mitchell. Patrick, you've definitely correctly gone in with Kouyaté as well, because absolutely imperious at centre back, brilliant performance. We didn't even put him in our man of the match poll on Twitter, but I'm not saying he was in charge of that, Mike Scott, but Kouyaté was brilliant. But to be completely fair to Mike, I forgot to mention him.
It was an understated performance by him. This is the thing. I think it's Tony Gale. I think he was doing the comms. I think he's a former West Ham player. He had mentioned how that was a big loss for West Ham to lose him, like it was to lose Tompkins. And I didn't realize he could also play, by the way, right back. He's on that for the national team. I mentioned this during the preseason watch-alongs. I'm telling you, he could play back there the entire season. I don't think they'd want him back there the entire season because of, you know, that's not really, he doesn't play the 100%. But Kouyaté is a very, very valuable player. And again, having back there with Dan yesterday, he was very controlled. Yeah, he made a few mistakes positioning wise, and he's not great as far as heading. That's probably why Steven's got the header in on that corner. But I just like the way he played today. He's what we call in Football Manager a ball playing centre half. You don't get those naturally because it's naturally a centre midfielder.
But is he defend, cover, or support? I mean,
anyway. Great question. But again, just played really well yesterday. I really love the performance by Kouyaté. Big fan.
Dio, you're going to take us through a little bit on Mitchell before we get to some listener questions and end up.
Yeah, the reason why I didn't mention Kouyaté and the other players is because, yes, everyone's talking about them. But let's talk a bit about Mitchell, because yesterday, even by just watching him play, he didn't seem out of place at all. But looking at his numbers, which CPFC Analytics has posted on Twitter, he said the following: Tyrique Mitchell's game by numbers ranked amongst Palace players. So let's start this. 14 complete passes, second. 14 good crosses passes, joint first. 59 touches, first. 0 fouls conceded, first.
Wow.
6 tackles, first. 7 times regained possession, joint third. 2 clearances, joint third. This man had a brilliant performance.
Wow.
But, of course, the likes of Kouyaté and Wilf's goal had just brushed it apart. And I was talking about this. This is the type of performance you need, Tyre. Because if you want to take Patrick Van Aanholt's place in the spot, you've done absolutely all you can. And hopefully this will send Roy a message saying that maybe Mitchell, he's got age on his side as well, should I start him?
Well, on that, I was really pleased to see the comments after the game from Roy, because he was asked about Mitchell's performance in the game against Southampton, about how good it was, and he quite rightly agreed. But he was really quick to point out, he says he's been like that pre-season and after lockdown as well, ever since he came into the side. And I thought that, you know, that's the sort of thing that Roy wasn't saying last year. I don't know if it was frustration or he was sort of digging his heels in a little bit over criticism about not using young players. But he certainly wasn't talking in those terms last year. And you know, for this year, for him to come out and actually say to the interview, actually, no, it wasn't just this game. Mitchell has impressed me and got better and better. I really like to hear that. You know, that gives me a little bit of a warm feeling that, you know, Roy has, if anything, he's probably rating Mitchell higher than some section of the fan base. So that's really inspiring to see, and that'll do nothing but give him more confidence. So I thought, I'm not surprised at those stats really, DR, but I am a little bit. I thought he was good, but I didn't realise he was that strong. And the no fouls wouldn't have won him any favours under some previous managers. But you know, I'll choose to look at that as a timing his tackles well and making the right decisions.
Yeah, I want to add seriously, and this is again, and I get the Roy fans out there, but this is my frustration. By the way, DR, those are great stats. By the way, thank you for sharing. I didn't realise he'd done so well. Fantastic. But this is my frustration with Roy. This is the second young player he's been forced to use and has proven that he can play. Give the kids a chance. Seriously, give a few more a chance. If they don't make it, I get it. But give the kids a chance. Wan-Bissaka's phenomenal. Tyreek Mitchell, very early sample size, but doing well. Give a couple. Give him some more chances to play. Give Nerman and Iakobi a chance to play. I get it. They may not be great right away, but there's a couple of them are starting to show now. If you give them a chance, not through injury, that they can at least perform where they're not embarrassed themselves. Give the kids a chance, please, Roy. I'm begging you. Please.
Yeah, good stuff. I am just noticing how long we've been gone on and how much left we've got in our show plan as well. I'm going to take this opportunity to point you in the direction of our sponsors, Pitch Sport Football. If you Google Pitch Sport Football, check out their site and download the app and get involved with us on there. Yeah, should be great throughout the course of this season. We should be getting some really good stats from them as we start to build up people's reactions to games and predictions and all that kind of stuff. So that'll help us throughout the course of the year. If you can get involved in that, and start to give them the data that they need to provide input into us, that'd be brilliant. But I also want to mention, obviously, so for the rest of the show that we've got left, we're planning on some questions from you, including a couple of audio clips, and then we're going to talk a little bit around transfers and the week ahead. We'll probably cut the transfer chat a little short in the interest of time, but don't forget DR gives daily updates pretty much on YouTube in terms of what's going on in the transfer world. I'm just trying to watch Patrick with his hand up there. What's going on, mate?
I was trying to point towards DR, but yeah, you know, because it's the reverse, I couldn't figure out where DR okay. was.
It's confusing.
No, I know he's, okay. he's there.
Yeah, no, it's hard, isn't it? Because I'm doing that and I'm off screen. So I want to do that. And I'm pointing to myself, so I need to... But then it's the wrong side, so...
Chris and DR up there.
Confusing. Yeah. So anyway, you know what's coming up if you're getting tired or you want to pause and listen to the rest of us later on, but we'll try and wrap this up relatively quickly. But so just a quick one word answer: who's your man of the match? Guaita or Guaita, as Patrick likes to say.
I'll be different. Kouyaté.
Guaita.
I swear he pronounces it Guaita himself.
I know. Sorry.
But it's fine. You're giving validation to that terrible, terrible song that everyone made up.
How about Vicente? Is that better?
Vicente is correct.
That's what Amber says. Yeah. I love it when
Vicente.
He says it.
Vicente. Yeah. I know you do, but it's like if I pronounced your name BR, you'd be annoyed, wouldn't you?
But that's not my name. It starts with a D.
But that's how you pronounce you. Yeah.
You can say Dyer. Dyer. That's what people
really?
Used to
Dyer. Dyer?
Yeah, Dyer. Okay. Yeah, Dyer. Well,
I'm definitely doing that now.
Dyer.
You've got to edit out your own F word there
Dyer
as well.
Dyer Kernes.
Dyer Kernes.
No, it's allowed on YouTube, but no on pods.
Do we have to put explicit up if we swear on YouTube?
The West Ham pod yesterday watched on late. They cursed the entire time and no one bleeped them out.
It was fine.
Was brilliant, by the way. Not to digress, but their watch along yesterday for that loss was absolutely epic. They almost had three epic like heart attacks at the same time. I felt really bad for like 2 seconds.
Not gonna lie, I was reading the West Ham Twitter and forums all day yesterday. All evening, just laughing and laughing and laughing. They're in a bit of bother there, aren't they?
Shame that, really.
And it's not like you can even say that, you know, the Newcastle are that good either.
Exactly.
They were just quite clearly trying to settle and having some trouble putting play together. But West Ham looked like a League One team, which is absolutely delightful. So look, we're going to have a little listened to a couple of some audio clips that came in via our WhatsApp function, which we should get the details for popping up on the screen any minute. But let's check in with audio clip one.
Hello, everyone. Just seen us beat Southampton 1-0. It's Rob Wynn here. Obviously very happy. And I think we played really well. We were solid. Southampton didn't have too many chances. The chances that they had, we had one incredible save from Guaita and another decent save at the end. Obviously great that Zaha scored. He should have scored another. I did have the fear that when he missed that, Southampton would go and score. But they didn't. But I've got to say, that is why Zaha is not going to be bought by anyone. Not for the money that we're trying to get for him, because a quality player should have finished that one. And of course, he got that one that was offside. That was close, that was tight, but it was offside, I think. 1-0, we are going to finish in the Champions League places, I imagine, looking at that. Let's see. Out the Palace.
Yeah, enjoyed that from Rob, and also very much enjoying first Patrick's reaction and then all of our reactions to the Wilf comments, which I think is interesting. So first of all, we missed the chat about the one that Wilf missed. We talked about the one that was given offside, but he did go through a little bit later on, and instead of where you'd argue what he did previously, which was the right finish, hitting across the keeper, he tried to drill it near post, which we've seen him do successfully a few times and missed. So it could have been an important moment. But the comment to extrapolate from that, I think probably Patrick might want to talk about that.
Yeah, he technically scored two of three chances because the one was offside. So what do you expect? I mean, name a striker that scores two out of three chances every single match. I mean, I get that Rob's, I think it's a bit tongue-in-cheek about no one would buy him, but if you look at that finishing yesterday, I thought it was pretty good. And again, he couldn't go the same way he went for the offside goal, because I'm pretty sure McCarthy would have figured that out, sussed that out. And you're right, Chris, he actually has gone high to the near post before and scored. So, I mean, listen, I'm a big Wilf fan. I'm going to defend Wilf. Here's the shirt here every single time. So I'm a little put off by that comment, but I get everyone's opinion. But again, that's a little harsh to say he won't get bought by a big side because he misses one of three chances.
Reaction, Kernas?
Yeah, Wilf Zaha. I remember what I said about Max Meyer in a watch along about the chances. I don't want to get into that area, but that chance, it was a big miss. I feel like he had a bit too much time on the ball and he overthought it, because the goal that he scored when it wasn't offside, when it was offside, was brilliant. That's what he wanted to do. But I feel like he had a bit too much time. But yeah, I wouldn't look too much into it. Hopefully, in the next couple of games, he can score a bit more goals, and then we can just silence that Wilfried Zaha's not as clinical up front.
Dio, with all respect, he ran from almost the halfway line for the goal that was offside. He had much more time for that shot than the one that he missed. So you're wrong about having too much time. Look at it again. He ran from almost the halfway line. He had IU to pass to, chose not to, and scored. The IU made a face like he wanted to get the tap in. He actually had more time for the goal he scored in the offside than for the other goal.
But you can see that he hesitated.
To say he had more time is wrong. I know what you're saying, but he missed it. I'm just saying he had more time for that goal that he scored than the goal that he missed. So you're...
Look, I'm just going to stop there because I didn't listen to any of that, because I noticed in our show chat that Diaz having a conversation with Mikey's dog.
Custard the dog. Who's that?
Yeah, I mean, so, I suspect Mikey's typing it at least for the dog, because the dog paws are difficult with keyboards, aren't they? Unless the dog is dictating to.
I didn't realize I was watching that, but that's what it made me laugh. Yeah, talking about that,
that distracted me as well. And perhaps we might be able to share that screen at in the edit, maybe, but probably not.
Yeah,
but no. Thanks again to Rob for those comments. Always good to have a little bit of controversy to discuss as well. Very much agree with your summing up of the game as well, and enjoyed the tongue-in-cheek mention of Champions League. But if we keep winning and we don't concede, what else are we going to do?
Yeah, brilliant.
But anyway, we've got another clip to follow. This one I think is from Ebo. So here we go.
All right, back in the nest. It's Ebo calling. Just first game of the season. Fantastic. When the squad was announced, I think I, like the majority of people, was a little bit worried. Southampton, I mean, they're one of those teams that we haven't got a great record against. And just the lineup just seemed to be same old. But when they went out and played, it looked a little bit different. And there seemed to be a little bit more flexibility up front, even with this starting lineup. So, yeah, positive coming off the back of that. It would have been nice to have won by more goals and maybe bossed the game a little bit more. But, you know, you've got to take 3 points and be happy with it. So 37 more points to go. And let's see how it goes. Come on, you Eagles.
Yeah, I saw a few people saying that, just 37 more points to go or 34 maybe. So I have to say that it did pop into my head as well, the fact that we've got three on the board already. How much, we're closer to avoiding relegation straight away.
That mindset drives me nuts. It really does. I can't help it. It really just drives me nuts. I get it, but I can't get into that mindset. It just drives me crazy. I'm too old for this. I really am too old for that mindset. I want to win something. Can we win something, please?
But I think, you know, it's always good to hear, you know, completely independently, you know, Ebo there is picking out a lot of the same themes that we picked out of the fact that, you know, that nervousness around the lineup. Noticing that, yes, you know, it might have felt very samey in terms of who was selected, but how we actually played was very different, and in particular that flexibility up front. So, you know, it just kind of revalidates the things we've been talking about, the things that people have noticed, and, you know, it just makes them that much more real when we're all seeing the same thing, which is good to hear. So thanks very much indeed, Ebo. Just ignoring further chat there, guys.
What are you typing in that chat? I can't even read that out loud, but I might get sick.
No, it's just costing a dog going back and forth.
It just proves that we've probably gone a little bit too long with this show. We're starting to lose our minds. So let's rattle through some questions. We'll try and give short answers as we can. Some of them do kind of lead to more discussion, but hopefully we've covered some of the detail of it anyway. So a certain Nick Gillard got in touch saying how much would not having a rocking stadium of noise affect our performances. I thought we lacked real attacking intent against Southampton and worry that we won't take games to the opposition and stamp any authority on them. We scored because of poor defending. So I'll take that one. And it's quite a long question and it's quite multifaceted. But basically, I think when we will miss our fans in particular when we're chasing games, you know, when sort of enthusiasm and urgency is gone from the team, it's got to come somehow from the touchlines and come from the team itself. And that, you know, all the players will tell you that sometimes it's actually the fans that kick that off in terms of that demand, that insistence that they up their game. So they'll lose that. But obviously, hopefully, you hope it will balance itself out over the course of a season because other teams won't have that either. But it's certainly an important part of the Selhurst crowd. And I do think, you know, we will miss it. And in terms of us scoring for poor defending, I think you could argue that, or you could say it was a perfectly timed counter-attack with some real quality in it as well. So I think we were decisive with our passing. So I'm not going to write off our goal scoring just as poor defending. I think we turned defence into attack very, very quickly. And it's very hard for any team to deal with that if you're precise with what you do. Next up was Mark Drew. I'll give you this one, Patrick. What and who will replace Zaha if he leaves?
You can't replace Wilf Zaha. So I'm going to just say that I don't have any idea who could replace him, and I just really hope he doesn't leave. And I think the changes and additions that we've made with Batshuayi and Ferguson and Eze might get him to stay. And as DR always says, who's going to pay that money for him anyway? So I just think he won't leave.
Right, good stuff. Red and Blue Dave, for you, DR. He says, with Batshuayi back, will we go with Ayew more as a winger, or is he there as a replacement? What do you think?
Wait, no, sorry. He doesn't say Batshuayi. He says Batsman. You changed that.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a reason I changed that. It's because Batsman is the worst name of a player ever. The club have used it now. It's a cricketer, isn't it? That's all
exactly.
I think about.
Batsman.
I just think about Michy coming off the bench wearing full whites and pads with a cricket bat in his hand.
Batman's
Batman
a fraud.
Will be fine with.
No, that's a fraud. He's a fraud.
Let's
I'm not
get
go
into your
yet.
Problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, your problems with Batman are your own. We don't need the listeners to have to
Anyways,
deal with that.
So with Batsman back, I'm not too sure. With Andros, you would suspect that he'll stay in the side lineup. But of course, right now, I think Jordan Ayew straight swap. I'm not too sure. I think Jordan Ayew goes to the bench if he performs like he did against Southampton, because you don't drop Andros Townsend. And Jordan Ayew, I doubt he goes to the left-hand side and replaces Jeffrey Schlupp, because if that was the case, you might suspect that Eze might come in. So right now, as it stands, if Batshuayi was to come in, I think Ayew goes.
I have to say, man, you're funny, Dio. You go with the wind. Last week, you said Andros was going to be play, and Ayew was great. And all of a sudden, Ayew has one bad game. All of a sudden, now Ayew should be dropped, and Andros should be playing. You're so funny. No, you really are. Seriously, you're the best.
Shame we haven't got the time to debate Dio's flakiness. But let's move on.
No, but all right. Let's just move on.
No, we haven't got time.
We'll pick it up another time.
So I'm going to deal with Mike Scott's question. You might know Mike Scott from somewhere. I'm just trying to think where. He said, can we discuss Mark Bright's excellent hair, please? I'm just going to say that I was pleased that it got trimmed, or as much as I enjoyed the afro, it was absolutely superb. But, people seem to be a bit down on the fact that he'd trimmed as much as he had. And, you know, I mean, I've got hair envy anyway, as it is. And I thought it was very neat and tidy. And that's all I'm going to leave it at. This one's for you, Patrick. Another light-hearted one from J. Kel Gudstv. And he noticed, and I didn't see this at all, but it pleased me greatly. He said, can we talk about the old bloke on the corner of Park and Homesdale watching through the gap in the gate with the match on his phone? His missus stood nearby reading a book occasionally, took him over some wine gums, trying his darndest to keep to the ritual. And that's a good observation, but it's the ritual, isn't it? The fact that, I suppose it's, you know, you're used to having to watch games on TV because of your location, but amazing to see the dedication and the attitude for some fans who really just can't let it go, and what a struggle it's going to be this season.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, as a young man, I would actually be that person. When I couldn't get into the matches, I was the one at the gate because I couldn't afford to get in, and the stewards would open the gates up 10 minutes before the matches end and let anybody that wanted to come in onto the terraces. So I'd do that. So that was great. I can relate to that. Secondly, we just had the US Open over here, and there was an Italian player playing. And there's a gentleman that was outside of the stadium with his phone, watching the matches, reacting, jumping up and down, going crazy. So it happens everywhere in sport. And I can understand people wanting to be at the games. But you got to show some love for that person, whoever he is that did that. That would be me. If that was me, if I still lived in Thornton Heath, I'd be at the games outside Sellers every week. I really would be.
Yeah. With the caveat, as long as he's socially distancing.
Oh, cool. With a mask on, you know, my Spider-Man mask on.
Yeah, exactly. next up, we've got a message in from Eagle Eye View, which is Chewy. He used to do the writing for us before we kind of abandoned the admin of having to have a written blog on the website. So Chewy's taking it over to Eagle Eye View, so check them out, particularly if you enjoyed his articles before. But Chewy's very much from the angle of doesn't like a lot of the negativity that's crept into the fan base. And look, to be fair, he's completely right that it can be over the top at times, but DR, this one's for you. So, you know, in summing up in probably a sentence or two, which is obviously a deeper topic than that, how do you feel in terms of the fact that Chewy is referring to it as incredible negativity that has consumed a portion of our fan base, and that whether it has gone beyond reason or become a witch hunt at times? Do you know what a witch hunt is?
Yeah.
I'll just check it, because sometimes you young people...
Yeah, I do.
What do you think? Are people over the top with their negativity? For example, how negative people were about that selection?
I'm not too sure. I'm 50-50 with it. I think in general, the negativity is there because it's been deserved to Roy because of how bad and how stubborn he is with his tactics. But pre-match, I'm not too sure. It's always going to be there, isn't it? Because people have their favourite, just like Roy has his favourite. So everyone expected Batshuayi to start, and you know, they want Eze to start as well. So you understand where they're coming from. But yeah, it's always going to remain there, I think.
Okay, we could debate that further, but we won't. But I dare say we'll refer to that theme a fair bit throughout the course of the season, but hopefully in a positive way, if results continue to be good. Mr. Cadbury's Parrot got in touch as well, saying, poor season last season for Andros seems to be back to somewhere near what we expect from him. Is he back, and does he make the first 11 when everyone is fit? So I've got to give a quick answer. We've talked about him already. My quicker answer is he looks a lot better. He looks a lot fitter. But if you look at the whole squad, if everybody's fit, particularly if we bring in a couple of other players, I think Andros is bench at best, if I'm being completely blunt. Yeah, there we go. There we go. Not everybody will agree with that, but we'll see. And finally, lovingly named Andy the Twat 1992. has asked for, and this will be Patrick to comment on that. He feels that let's talk about the need that we don't need Patrick Van Aanholt to play left back unless Mitchell gets injured. So favouring Mitchell over PVA. Thoughts, Patrick?
I would have no problem with that. PVA is really good getting forward, but I've always had a problem with him defensively. I think Mitchell's much more solid defensively, even though he's inexperienced, and I think that he can learn the attacking part. So I would have no problem if Mitchell was to continue at left back. But we all know when PVA is healthy, he will start because it's Roy.
There we go. And again, can't debate that any further because of time. But there we are. So really quickly, we're looking at the week ahead. We're going to, at the request of Mikey, our producer / controller of Custard the Dog, we do need to have a quick chat about Sirloth. We'll talk about Benrahma as he's the strongest rumour at the moment. And then we'll probably have to wrap it up without talking about too much else other than a tiny little look ahead, previewing the preview once again, talking about our thoughts about the Man United game. So first up, Sirloth, I'm going to start talking about this myself, and Dio, I don't know if you have anything to add. We'll see from your transfer rumours, roundups and things like that. But where we seem to be at the moment. So I think, first of all, quick summary of what the deal is with Sirloth. Obviously, the loan can't be terminated by any one party. So Trabzonspor and Sirloth and Palace all need to agree that that loan needs to be terminated. And I think, depending on who initiates, there's possibly some degree of a cost impact and all that kind of stuff. But basically, Trabzonspor can't buy him, can they, DR, until he plays 50% of games this season.
Yeah.
He's had an offer. Red Bull Leipzig really want to buy him. They've made an offer. The player wants to join. He's so far decided he's not going to turn back up after international duty at Trabzonspor, which is hilarious. So it looks like all parties are trying to force through that move. So a lot of people are still wondering, will he come back to Palace? And look, he probably doesn't want to, let's face it, and I'm not sure we necessarily want him back either, as much as he's done well out on loan. I think for all parties, the Leipzig deal, if we can get money out of it, would be great. But bottom line is, he could ask to terminate the loan and return to Palace, and that would be the end of it. He's got another year on his contract, and that would be it. But obviously, everybody wants a deal to get done here. So the likelihood of him being a Palace player, I would kind of say, is pretty low, if not non-existent. But he is doing everything he can to force this move. So I'll leave it there in terms of my summary. Anything to add on that, DR?
Not really. That's it.
But you had the joy of translating the article in Turkish, which I love the phrasing of when they were talking about him being disciplined for not to.
Yeah, he was meant to turn up on Tuesday. So we're talking about last week Tuesday, but he stayed on international duty till Thursday and said that he'll be coming back on Friday, and that hasn't happened yet, so he'll be disciplined. So basically, Sirloth doesn't want to go back to Turkey and doesn't want to go back to Trabzon, which I don't blame him.
who do you support? Fenerbahce or Galatasaray? Fenerbahce.
No, Fenerbahce, yeah.
Okay, I'll make sure we clear.
No,
you see his face when you think Galatasaray.
I know, how dare I say Galatasaray to him.
upsetting turn of events. Right, the only other one I want to talk about now is, it was an article in a paper we won't mention, which fortunately someone screenshotted.
Son, sorry.
You're not allowed to say those words.
Sorry.
I'll very quickly mention they talked about Scott Banks going on loan to Rochdale, which sounds like a good loan to me. I think that would suggest there might be more players coming in, because the intention, I believe, with Banks was that he would hang around for a little while to make sure we had enough numbers and cover in wide areas in terms of first team training. So if we're looking to get him out on loan, it might suggest we're looking to get someone else in. And in the same article, the headline part of the article, suggesting that Saïd Benrahma of Brentford might be on his way to Palace, with 20 million being talked about, which is about 10 million less than was rumoured before. But suggesting that others have dropped out of the race and Palace are very confident of getting the deal done. So first of all, I'll start with you, Patrick. Reaction to that?
Quite surprised at the change in the price. Would take him 100% at 20 million. He'd be a great addition. Again, my concern I've mentioned before is how he fits into Roy's system, with his stubbornness to put new players in anyway, players of that ilk, that kind of skill level. But Benrahma would be a great addition. I like the, just going back, I like the Banks idea of him going loan. I also saw an article from Matt Woosden that he said today that Kamani Gordon might be going out on loan, and he's only a scholar. He said that it might be, that's about maybe the first scholar that's ever gone on loan, so that would be another thing. But again, I think Bernard would be great. Quick question, Hambo. Have they changed the squad size due to pandemic? Is it still going to be 25, or they extended it because of this? I don't even know.
I think it's still 25. Okay. I mean, technically speaking, if you count the players, someone was writing this. I can't remember who was writing this on Twitter earlier on, that technically speaking, we might have a squad of 30
right.
To choose from. But I'm not sure if that's 30 over 21 or it's just exactly, 30 yeah. we'll be picking right. from.
My point being is
probably need to do some research.
Right, because the point being is if Banks goes and Benrahma comes in, you know, that's an equal swap, even though I think Banks is under 21 years, actually. So that would be good. But if it's not, then there's a numbers issue. But like I said, Benrahma, I mean, come on, if he comes in, that's ridiculous. I can't even go there with that, because that would be a tremendous addition. It would be.
Yeah, he looks a very, very good player.
Yeah.
And I'd hesitate to say it looks a really real Palace type of player as well. You'd be very excited. Dio, about yourself, some comments on those rumours?
Yeah, just a newspaper that spoils it. But he was linked with us last week. I'm not too sure who it was. I don't know if it was the same newspaper. But yeah, it seems like Palace are genuinely interested. And if we get him, it's just a conversation for another day, but the depth issue, like who plays where? I mean, we can't play 12, 30 man at the same time. So what happens?
I'm not. You've already sure. benched IU and Andros, so he'll find a spot.
Hopefully.
But no, it's a problem we would love to have.
Oh gosh, the problem you always want to have as a coach, exactly. Too many good players.
You know, and it's, you know, probably worth us mentioning that there's also, you know, work being done by to look at players for the future as well. We've talked about them a lot in terms of Bella Kotchup and centre-back, and Flynn Downes, who's not been featuring for Ipswich on the day of recording.
I watched that today and he wasn't in the lineup, so interesting.
Excuse me. So we'll see what happens with that. All right, just very, very quickly between us, we'll have a look ahead to Man United. Of course, the preview team will be recording a full podcast later in the week to go through that. So check that out. All your podcast apps should land some point on Thursday or Friday in time for you to listen and get their views before the game. Keep an eye on our social media accounts to point you in the direction for any questions and comments you want to discuss with the guys as well. At some point, they might do the video version as well, if you're very, very lucky. But we're keeping it to just us as we trial it at the moment. So let's talk about Man United. It's a different type of game, obviously, different type of challenge. So in terms of my views, I'm hoping that we don't change anything too much tactically, that we stick with the 4-4-2 we've been working on. But I do expect and kind of hope to see Eze come in for Schlupp. And I kind of feel that this change will be Townsend out for Batshuayi, and it will be Ayew who goes on the right-hand side, as we sort of talked about a little bit earlier on. So front two of Zaha and Batshuayi, with Eze on the left and Ayew on the right. And then hopefully, you know, McCarthy had a good game, but I expect to see Luka back in there. Or potentially, if he's recovered in time, Jairo Riedewald, which might be nice as well. So, but there we are. That's my thoughts. And in terms of a score prediction, you know, I can't help but be a little bit negative because it got us a result this week. So I've got to stick with predicting defeats until I get it right. So I'm going to predict a 2-0 defeat in the hope that I'm reverse psychologing it again.
Yeah.
That's my theory. Diop?
We've got Bournemouth on Tuesday, but just...
Yeah, I'm ignoring that's not a proper cup, is it?
Yeah, that's, unless we win it, of course. But yeah, I'm predicting a 1-0 draw once again so that we go on to win the game or at least get a point out of it. And I wouldn't change too much about, as we've already discussed with Patrick.
Yeah, he won't change the lineup. It'll be exactly the same lineup we start with. And I'll predict a 2-1 loss because I'm always negative. Everybody knows it about me.
Good stuff. Love it, Patrick. Join the club. So what do you reckon? We're going to try and find a dodgy stream and do a watch along for Bournemouth.
Yeah, we'll talk about that off stream, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Trying to point the podcast listeners in that direction. Should they want to check us out?
So, exactly.
It's always good fun, isn't it? Our watch alongs. We enjoy doing them.
You never
wasn't sure that other people. Go on.
You never talk about the videos. You always talk about your podcast like we haven't done videos for 10 years.
We haven't done videos for 10 years. A little bit of revenge for you there from my abusing of you on the watch alongs, yeah. Mentioning the podcast. But anyway, do check out social media for links to that if we're able to do it. And we certainly will do if we are able. And like I say, we really enjoyed doing them, and I'm surprised at how many of you seem to enjoy watching along as well. It's always a surprise anyone wants to listen to us at all, but good times. Anyway, look, let's end that there. It's way, way longer than we expected. Don't know if we're going to try and chop this up and edit it to some form of sensible length, but you know, probably not. That takes effort, right? So all that remains is for me to thank Mikey and Custard the Dog for producing. Thank DR and Patrick for joining me to discuss today. And of course, to thank you for listening. Check out Preview Show Thursday/Friday, and we'll be back to review maybe the Bournemouth game as well as the Man United game as soon as we can. Bye, Custard.
Bye, Custard.
Bye.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.